Well, when I first started preparing this sermon, the temperatures were in the high 20s, and I was put in mind that song of Ella Fitzgerald that you may remember, "Summertime, the living is easy, the fish are jumping and the cotton is high." We actually sang about summertime in that song we just sang, like the summer breezes playing, like the tall trees softly swaying, like the lips of silent praying is the perfect peace of God. Well, with summertime on my mind, I thought, you know, what's better than to have a good book and to sit on the beach and just indulge yourself? And so I thought this morning, but slightly unusually, we'd look at a story. It's a story, actually, that's been coming up in our readings through this past couple of months, but which we haven't really paid much attention to. It's a story that occupies almost two books of the Old Testament, and if you want to refamiliarize yourself, or if you haven't heard it before, do take the time to go into the second half of 1 Samuel and the whole of 2 Samuel. It's a powerful and absolutely amazing story from which we have just this very short excerpt this morning. He was the youngest son of eight sons. And being the youngest, he didn't have the opportunity to get involved with all the exciting adventures of his older brothers, who often went out to battle, because David was left behind to look after the sheep. And perhaps in those early days, it was quite a lonely existence. He was left at home. But as circumstances happened, there was a moment when the children of Israel, who had chosen to have a king to reign over them, faced the problem that the first king that had been appointed to reign over them, Saul, proved to be a wicked king, disobedient to the purposes of God. And so Samuel the prophet was commissioned by God to go and find another person who could take over the throne of Israel. And he came to the family of Jesse, and assuming, of course, that the older sons were the ones that were fit and well and handsome and capable of taking leadership, one by one the sons of Jesse were brought in front of Samuel, and one by one they were rejected. Seven of the sons walked in front of Samuel, and none of them were accepted. And Samuel, wondering if in fact he'd come to the right place at the instruction of the Lord, said to Jesse, "Do you not have any other sons?" And Jesse said, "Well, I've got a younger son. He's out there somewhere on the hills looking after the sheep." And Samuel said, "Call him." And David came into the presence of Samuel. And at that moment, Samuel recognized that this was to be the next king of Israel. And he was anointed with that purpose. Now, it's a long and protracted story. It takes place over many years. Lots of things happens, of course. Having been appointed as the future king of Israel before Samuel had died, inevitably led to conflicts. Clearly, David was now the preferred option. He was a young and handsome and capable man. And Saul, in sometimes his fits of rage, would call David into his presence to play the harp, to calm his spirit. But Saul could not be satisfied with David in that position. And so as the story unfolds, the conflict becomes more and more intense. And David has to go into hiding. It wasn't an easy start to his future responsibilities. We don't have the time to cover all of the incidents that took place until eventually Saul dies. And David is crowned as the new king of Israel. That was a huge adjustment for David, having been a shepherd boy, often on the hills alone with the sheep, now finding himself with responsibility and authority and power. By this time, of course, he's married several times, in fact, as of course the habit was, and by each of the wives he'd had children. The oldest of his children was Amnon, a son. But amongst his children was a very beautiful young girl by the name of Tamar. Now, Amnon had a particular infatuation with Tamar, and his lust for her grew to the point that he contrived a very clever plot to ensure that he and Tamar were alone in his bedchamber, and he proceeded to rape her. It's not something we enjoy or appreciate or value in our present day, but even then it was a wrong deed, and clearly the other sons of David were angry, and in particular, Absalom, the second son, probably a son of another of David's wives, a half-brother to Amnon, took it upon himself to bear revenge on Amnon, and 2 years after that deed of raping, Amnon was killed by Absalom. Now David, of course, as the king of Israel, was deeply troubled by these things that were going on in his family, and he banished Absalom from his presence, and Absalom went into exile for some time, until he was called back into Jerusalem, where he began to plot for his own future, being convinced that as the second oldest son, it was by right his privilege to be the next king of Israel. And so he began to curry favors with the people, and he began to pull together followers to himself rather than followers to David. And the relationship between David and Absalom became increasingly tense and difficult, until one day Absalom decided it was the time for him to launch a coup, and a civil war broke out in Israel between Absalom and his forces and David and his. Now, this was a difficult time for both of them, but particularly for David. For David had great love for all of his children, and particularly, we're told in this story, he had great love for Absalom. Absalom was a handsome and fit and capable man, and clearly he could have well become the next king of Israel if only he had bided his time. But he had overweening pride, and in his ambition, he longed to become king before David had passed away. And so a conflict arose, and a battle was fought in which David's forces and Absalom's forces were against one another. The circumstances were quite horrendous. Actually, David had been forced out of Jerusalem. It wasn't an easy time for David and his forces. And while David was away from Jerusalem, Absalom did something that caused great public humility to David, for Absalom laid with, I think it was 10 of his concubines. But the battle was fought, and in the midst of the battle, David said, "Now, whatever you do, take care that no harm comes to my son Absalom." Remember, he was leading the enemy forces, but David was anxious that his son was protected. And he said that 3 times, and most of his followers heard those words. And he was, in that sense, David, hopeful that Absalom himself would not be hurt and harmed. But we're told in the story that was read for us this morning that in the thick of battle, Absalom, charging down on his mule, gets caught in an oak tree. Now, some translations of this story say it was his hair that got caught, but it says in the version that we read, his head got caught in an oak tree, and the mule carried on. A pretty gruesome sort of image of a poor man stuck in a tree, unable to get down without his feet on the ground. Now, probably if he'd stayed there for long, he would have hung himself. But as it happened, the story that was read for us this morning, just a little parenthesis in my storytelling, unfortunately, what you read today isn't the whole story. There were snippets of the story in the reading that was read for you. And if you want to get the whole story, you have to go to the Bible and read it. Because initially, there is a desire on the part of the forces of Absalom to protect Absalom in light of David's request that he be cared for. But it is Joab who then decides to go forth and kill Absalom. And we're told at the end of this passage that when that news came to David, he broke down in great anguish and concern. "Oh, Absalom, my son, oh, Absalom, my son, would that I could have died in your place." These are amazing stories. David, deeply touched by the death of a son who had killed his other son and who was now fighting for the throne of Israel against David, his father. Great compassion and great love and deep, deep concern. David is a distraught father, wondering whether he could have done anything different in the way in which he had raised his children. What went wrong? Helpless in doing anything to avert the tragedy that had taken place. It's a dramatic and dark story. David cared deeply for Absalom, despite his overweening pride and his ambition. There's no good news in this story, is there? And there's lots of shoulds in the story. Perhaps David should have disciplined Amnon after he laid and raped his sister Tamar. David should have done something to correct Absalom after he killed his older brother Amnon, but he didn't. There's lots of shoulds, things he should have done this, he should have done that. And surely David must have carried some of that, not just grief, but guilt at the things he could have done to have made the story come out in different ways. David's army killed, it says in the passage, 20,000 men all over a squabble that was actually in the family, because it, of course, involved so many other people. Talk about a dysfunctional family and a dysfunctional royal administration. We have it here in this story, and it's well worth reading. The Bible doesn't hold any punches when it tells us these details of this past story. I think it's a case of the good that I would have liked to have done is not what I do, but the evil that I do not want to do. A reminder of the words of Paul in Romans. Well, after this battle, and perhaps after a certain distance from the experience, and David perhaps coming to some terms in his own mind, things do begin to settle down in Israel. And the story rushes on towards the end of David's life. It could be that the story ends with a sort of everything went happily ever after. But the storyteller hasn't quite finished the story. And it's very interesting. There's a little appendix to the story at the end of 2 Samuel, which is well worth reading. It's a story of David now reaching old age, perhaps still fearful that the enemies of Israel will still come against him, deciding, under God's instruction as it happens, and that's an interesting little twist to the story, but deciding to undertake a census of the children of Israel. And so he sends his bureaucrats with their clipboards out across all the villages of Israel to count the number of able-bodied men. And when the census is complete and the votes are counted, if you like, it took more than 3 days, I'm sure, to count how many, eventually the census shows David that he has 800,000 able-bodied men in Israel and 500,000 able-bodied men in Judah. Now, to put that into proportion, that's bigger than the entire military force of the United States of America. That's a huge number of people. And one could imagine as David sitting there as an older king on his throne, thinking about these numbers and thinking, I'm pretty secure. I've got enough people to fight any enemy that may come against me. But then the story takes an interesting twist. It's almost as if that discovery, that realization that he has so much power, makes him realize or makes him question on what he is placing his confidence. Is he placing his confidence on the size of his military potential? And that last chapter of 2 Samuel says, David broke down and he said to God, I have sinned. I have been extremely foolish. That's an interesting outcome of a long and convoluted story of conflict and interfamily challenges and military conflicts that have led to the death of so many people. David finally comes to realize his own foolishness. You can look at our present world through the lens of that story. It's a fascinating story. Much of what went on in David's family that had implications for the nation of Israel happened today in so many different ways in our own world. The things that go on in our own world, the confidence we have in our own military strength or in our economic wealth, the attention we give to the things that seem to give us security, and that clearly are not going to ultimately help. David finally wakes up. It's a bit like a prodigal son moment that he realizes how much of his life has been wasted because he has relied so much on all of these things. He moves from hubris to humility, from his position of power to an everyday humanity, a realization of his own limitations, from selfish pride to submission. So as we look out across our world today and the complexities that exist in leadership, in politics, and in business, the preoccupation that policymakers have with the marketplace and the economy, with the lack of courage that we have in managing conflict in our families or our communities or in our nations, our reliance on military strength and on financial capital, our blindness to privilege, and our false sense of humility, may God give us insight and the courage to see the foolishness of our ways. I have sinned. I have been very foolish, said David. Amen.